Hi, you are listening to scan.org, produced for NIM FM, that is nimfm.org, and other non-profit media worldwide.
We're working hard seeing the results of the investigation.
I suspect I'm training the psyche of our country. I understand that.
They're in a hole, and they're digging themselves deeper into it.
We will, and we will not, and we will, and we will not, and we will, and we will not, and we will, and we will not rest. We will not, and we will, and we will not, and we will, and we will not, and we will, and we will not, and we will rest. Withdraw from the fight. We will not, and we will, and 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 we will, and we will withdraw from the fight.
Withdraw
from the fight. We will, and we will, and we will, and we will withdraw.
Today, America and our allies have taken the offensive in a war unlike any we have fought before. Today, we are safer.
Australia and the United States were terrorist targets long before the military operation in Iraq, before the invasion of Iraq, before the military operation in Iraq.
Well, I think the reality is that the U.S. troops are not benefiting the Iraqi people, but are contributing to sectarian conflict in Iraq and contributing to chaos and instability there. And the case I make for withdrawal is not based on what would be best for the U.S. troops, but actually on what would be best for the Iraqi people. We're now 3 years into this occupation, and a clear pattern is emerging that the longer the occupation continues, the worse things have gotten. There's less electricity, less security, less access to safe drinking water. Iraqis are afraid to leave their homes, afraid to send their children to school, afraid to go to mosques. And really, there's been a tremendous deterioration of that society's living conditions and social circumstances. And I think that can be directly linked to the occupation, which is unwelcomed by the Iraqi people.
To suggest that if we weren't in Iraq, we would see a rosier scenario with fewer extremists joining the radical movement requires us to ignore 20 years of experience.
The occupation is causing instability, is causing chaos, and the longer the occupation continues, the greater likelihood that that chaos and instability will persist. So it will not immediately and overnight turn into a situation where Iraq is at peace and society overnight achieves stability. The conditions of withdrawal will help determine what happens after the withdrawal. For example, if the United States seeks to punish Iraq as it sought to punish Vietnam after it withdrew, if it imposes sanctions, that would lead to a worse circumstance. On the other hand, if the United States is compelled to pay reparations to the Iraqi people, you would see a different circumstance. Also, I think it's becoming clear that the reconstruction money that the United States has put into Iraq is not going to the rebuilding of the country, but is going to corporations that are lining their own pockets rather than rebuilding for the Iraqi people. I think the Iraqi people could do a better job rebuilding their own country. First of all, the basis for the U.S. continuing in Iraq is the idea that the Iraqi people need an occupation in order to rebuild a society. The reality is each day we have more and more evidence that the troops aren't helping the Iraqis rebuild, but are engaged in pacification campaigns, are engaged in some cases torture, human rights abuses. So the legitimacy of the occupation is eroding. Secondly, every day that the United States continues in Iraq, it prevents the emergence of Iraqis' own control over their lives and their society. So it's actually hindering the emergence of Iraqi institutions of civil society.
I think there's extreme unhappiness within the U.S. military about the conduct of the war, both during the run-up and the occupation. But I want to emphasize, it's not just the Bush administration that they blame. They also blame their own leadership, the uniformed military, the senior generals, who occupied Iraq negligently, didn't understand the task at hand, put their troops into situations for which the troops simply weren't trained or prepared. Frequently, abuse was blamed on the lowest ranks, when actually the people I think most to blame, and I think these officers I interviewed thought they were most to blame, were the military leadership who put them out there. For example, in the summer of 2003, in the 1st Armored Division, a good unit was in Baghdad. They were told to stop some looting. And they decided on their own, these soldiers, that the way to make people stop looting was to make them cry. Now, you won't find that in any counterinsurgency textbook or U.S. military training manual, but they decided that's what they were going to do. So when they caught two teenage boys looting along with their father, they said to the father, "Which of the boys do you want us to shoot?" And the father was horrified and said, as most would, "No, please shoot me instead." They said, "You don't get that choice." And they took one of the boys around to the other side of a truck, took out a weapon, and fired it past the boy's head. And then they let all three go. Now, the soldiers had probably accomplished the short-term mission of stopping these people from looting. They'd undercut the goal.
The security situation is a classic catch-22. The United States has every interest in saying that the Iraqis are incapable of policing themselves and the security forces are not ready. The Iraqi prime minister is a prime minister who came to power and is remaining in power through the protection of U.S. security forces. They were also were voting for parties that claimed to, almost without exception, that they were for the immediate withdrawal of foreign troops, and that once they came to power, quickly abandoned that under pressure from the United States. So people voted with aspirations, but they're now seeing something quite different. And the disaffection is growing. How else can we explain the fact that there's been a massive increase in attacks on U.S. forces and on the Iraqi security forces that they're collaborating with?
I have also learned that there is an NIE on Iraq, specifically on Iraq, that has been left in draft form at the National Intelligence Council. That is because some of our leaders don't want us to see it until after the election.
Another great example is Colonel H.R. McMaster, led the 3rd Armored Cavalry Regiment in northwest Iraq earlier this year. I was embedded with his operation up there. And it really struck me. This was a unit that had a mediocre time its first time out. An Iraqi general turned himself in and was beaten to death during questioning. An officer in the 3rd Armored Cavalry Regiment carried a baseball bat he called his Iraqi beater, and he used it. McMaster took over the unit, looked all his soldiers in the eye, several thousand of them, and said, "Every time you disrespect an Iraqi, you are working for the enemy." That's counterinsurgency doctrine summarized in a phrase that any 20-year-old soldier can grasp. The question that you pose, though, is why doesn't the U.S. military learn from its own good examples, even in Iraq? And I think the answer is the general officers, as a group, have put themselves off limits to criticism internally. The Army has a very good lessons learned process, but it stops at the colonel level. Generals simply are not criticized. Why is the military allowed to get away with this? Because the U.S. Congress is asleep at the wheel. Historically, during wartime, the U.S. Congress has been very intrusive, has conducted a lot of oversight and accountability hearings. But now the U.S. Congress doesn't really want to touch the military. It wants to, quote-unquote, support the troops. So it doesn't push the military and ask it the tough questions. We are now 4 years into this war. The U.S. military has been fighting in Iraq longer than it fought in Europe in World War II. Yes, but anybody who disagrees with us simply is unpatriotic. Agrees with the U.S. military has consistently been over-optimistic about Iraq. For example, the official U.S. war plan for Iraq called for U.S. troops to be down to 30,000 by the late summer 2003. Here we are 3 years later, and they're at 130,000 in Iraq. They have this thing they call transferring control of areas from U.S. forces in Iraq to Iraqi forces. I think really what they've been doing is transferring lack of control.
The evidence is that the U.S. isn't containing sectarianism, but is encouraging sectarianism. So therefore, if we oppose sectarianism and we want the Iraqis to reconcile, I think we should be for the withdrawal of troops. Well, we've been told a number of times that the Iraqi police will soon be in a position where they can govern and police the country themselves. We've been told that troop levels will reduce, and what we continue to see after each time we're told we've turned a corner in Iraq, things are getting better, the situation is improving. In fact, the situation has gotten worse. This is a pattern that we should be familiar with from the Vietnam War, where very similar claims were made, and yet the occupation continued for years. The differences, though, are sobering, because the reality is that Iraq today is far more strategic for the planning of U.S. empire than Vietnam was. And also, the United States said going into Iraq it would bury, it would end the Vietnam syndrome, the public reluctance for the United States to use force abroad. So, in fact, they face a situation where a reversal in Iraq would be a serious detriment to the ability of the United States to project its power globally. So they have more at stake in creating at least the appearance of victory in Iraq, and therefore continuing. This is why the Bush administration talks about, quote-unquote, staying the course. In reality, all this is amounting to is they're in a hole and they're digging themselves deeper into it.
No, I stand by it. Absolutely.
So you disagree with the President of the United States?
Well, I've stated whatever I had to, that this has, it has made the world a more dangerous place.
We are safer because we've taken action to protect the homeland. We are safer because we are on the offense against our enemies overseas.
You know, terrorism certainly existed before the Iraq War, but, you know, so on the other hand, you know, the Iraq War has certainly sort of, it's re-energized Al-Qaeda and its affiliates. Michael Scheuer, who is the head of the Bin Laden unit at CIA, would say that, you know, if Bin Laden would leave in Christmas, Iraq, the Iraq War would have been his Christmas gift.
Today's report is a devastating indictment of the Bush administration's unrelenting, misleading, and deceptive attempts to convince the American people that Saddam Hussein was linked with Al-Qaeda.
The regime has long-standing and continuing ties to terrorist organizations, and there are Al-Qaeda terrorists inside Iraq.
He had long-established ties with Al-Qaeda.
This administration and the Republican leadership in the Congress have weakened our country and made Americans less safe, and made Americans less safe.
In the School of Arts in Nimbim here at the Spring Exhibition, and I'm speaking to...
My name's Paulina Hearn. I'm manning the desk today, and I'm one of the artists represented here.
That's why I came. I saw you had a little piece displayed here called The Art of Asymmetry. What was it called?
An Act of Asymmetrical Warfare.
Yeah. Well, that stands out here for... various reasons, but I'm a political interested person, that's why I came to interview you. How did you come to do this little piece of work?
I believe artists should make political statements whenever they can. So I try to do that. But with this piece, I was shocked when three prisoners at Guantanamo Bay hung themselves, and the commander at Guantanamo Bay called it an act of asymmetrical warfare. I looked up asymmetrical. It was difficult to find an actual meaning for it in the dictionary. I don't know what he meant. I found the statement quite obscene myself.
And so you sat down. Let's describe that piece a little bit. It's like a box. It looks like a box on the wall.
Yeah. I use found objects as much as I can.
Can you describe it for the listeners?
Behind is homemade paper in a grid formation, like a cell formation. And it's a wire box or cell. And hanging inside, I've created a little person in orange overalls. It's a bit indistinct, but you can see, if you look closely, that this person is actually hanging by the neck.
Yeah.
The arms and the feet and hands are quite obvious and the rest is a little bit obscure. And I've covered the front with some metal plates, painted it all grey, sort of prison grey, and left a large, like a porthole, that you can peer through in the front.
Yeah, well, that's the intriguing bit for the visitor, I believe, or, well, I reacted to it.
Yeah.
I peered into it. Yeah, well, that's a very, that's, it stands out here for me because no one else relates to the contemporary issue of we are at war in several countries now. And the accompanying breaking of human rights, in this case, Guantanamo Bay, stuck out for you.
Yes.
Was that a trigger, or did you just take one issue at a time there?
No, I think it's been an issue for a long time for me. I mean, you know, David Hicks has been there for 5 years, untried, tortured, the whole bit. I think what America's doing in Guantanamo Bay is obscene.
Yeah.
What they're doing in the world, I find, you know, especially in Iraq and Afghanistan, is just dreadful. Yeah,
all right. Well, I wonder whether other Nimbim artists get their heads around to this, or whether they're all too shy, or whether... What is your impression? Why you are the only one here?
I don't know. I mean, I guess...
Not being condescending in any form. I'm just very interested why artists... So few of us here in Nimbim, at least, I can see, are actually engaging on this issue where we're at, where we're about to destroy this planet.
Yeah, maybe, I don't know, maybe we all like to look at art that's really pleasing to the eye rather than confrontational.
Yeah.
But I do like to try and include a confrontational piece in any exhibition that
Well, that's the old school. I was brought up that art has to do something with reality and in a condensed form or so. Is it? Is that sort of how you would view an artistic effort? Like,
again, I think I just feel that artists have a what's the word I'm looking for? They should make statements, strong statements about how they feel, and here's a perfect venue to, you know, the public are coming in, local people are coming in, and for me it's important to do that.
Australia and the United States were terrorist targets long before the military operation in Iraq.
Occupied Iraq negligently, didn't understand the task at hand, put their troops into situations for which the troops simply weren't trained or prepared.
But are engaged in pacification campaigns, are engaged in some cases in torture, human rights abuses. So the legitimacy of the occupation is eroding.
Generals simply are not criticized.
It's becoming clear that the reconstruction money that the United States has put into Iraq is not going to the rebuilding of the country, but is going to corporations that are lining their own pockets.
Because the U.S. Congress is asleep at the wheel. The U.S. military has been fighting in Iraq longer than it fought in Europe in World War II. They have this thing they call transferring control of areas from U.S. forces in Iraq to Iraqi forces. I think really what they've been doing is transferring lack of control.
The reality is that Iraq today is far more strategic for the planning of U.S. empire. They're in a hole and they're digging themselves deeper into it.
Security has deteriorated significantly in the last, I would say, 2 years. It has been a slow but steady process, and now security is bad in most of the country, in basically everywhere.
I have also learned that there is an NIE on Iraq, specifically on Iraq, that has been left in draft form at the National Intelligence Council. That is because some of our leaders don't want us to see it until after the election.
And made Americans less safe. And made Americans less safe.
Yes, that anybody who disagrees with us simply is unpatriotic. It's going to be interesting to see how that plays out in American politics in the next few weeks.
I think we should be for the withdrawal of troops. I think we should be for the withdrawal of troops. I think we should be for the withdrawal of troops. I think we should be for the withdrawal of troops. I think we should be for the withdrawal of troops. I think we should be for the withdrawal of troops. I think we should be for the withdrawal of troops. I think we should be for the withdrawal of troops. I think we should be for the withdrawal of troops.
And impossible, like I was born with a hole in my heart. It's an obstacle. I left to die by the doctors in the children's hospital, but I never lose hope. Success is psychological. The world is volatile and the street is my education, shaping the nation like the blueprint of a mason. While Shawshank record deals get you raped on occasion, so I'm focused on my economic situation. I'm like the little kids on TV that dig through the trash. I hustle regardless of the way you talk shit and laugh. A lot of niggas drop science, but they don't know the math, cause their mind is narrower than the righteous path. It's funny how on the block niggas that kill you for cash but never raise the gun to cry out freedom at last. The Cold War is over, but the world is still getting colder. Atlas walking through the projects with the hood on my shoulders. I would like to raise my children to grow to be soldiers, but then a general would decide when their life would be over. So I work hard until my personality split, like the Black Panthers into the Bloods and the Crips. They said I'd never be shit, but now I sit and reminisce like Yeshua Ben Yosef flipping through Genesis. Ignorance is venomous and it murders the souls, spreading like a virus, running rampant out of control. So if I should ever fall and get caught in a hustle, let them know that I died while I fought in a struggle. From the hood rats to rich kids lost in a bubble, spray painted on the streets and in the subway tunnels. Write it down and remember that we never gave in. The mind of a child is where the revolution begins. So if the solution has never been to look in yourself, how is it that you expect to find it anywhere else? Immortal technique in the streets, back on the hustle, cause three strikes that get you life for stuffing cracks in a duffel. Upstate behind steel gates, attacked in a scuffle. Razor blade stuck on the side of pencils, hacked through your muscle. But the emptiness is what bleeds you to death when it cuts you. And it's the lawyers, not the inmates, scheming to fuck you. Trying to fight the system from inside eventually corrupts you. But that's what you get when you put a corporation above you. And it's the people that love you that seem to hurt you the most. Sometimes when they die, you find yourself cursing a ghost. But you make success, nobody delivers your fate. Sometimes you give and you take, since prehistoric vertebrates crawled out of the lakes. And that's the truth about life, more to do with the ghetto in your car rims and your ice. Cause even though we survived through the struggle that made us, we still look at ourselves through the eyes of people that hate us. But I'ma make it regardless of the trumped up charges and semi-automatic barrages that empty the cartridge. Post-traumatically scarred kids that try to be brave, cause niggas backstab each other just to try to get paid. Turn cannibal like knights during the crusades, afraid of responsibility, addicted to greed, beating a girl, purposefully losing a seed, as if we bound to the destiny we used to receive. So if I should ever fall and get caught in a hustle, let them know that I died while I fought in a struggle. From the hood rats to rich kids lost in a bubble, spray painted on the streets and in the subway tunnels. Write it down and remember that we never gave in. The mind of a child is where the revolution begins. So if the solution has never been to look in yourself, how is it that you expect to find it anywhere else? I used to wonder, why people don't believe in themselves. And then I saw the way they portrayed us to everyone else. They cursed us to only see the worst in ourselves, blind to the fact the whole time we were hurting ourselves. I used to wonder why people don't believe in themselves. And then I saw the way they portrayed us to everyone else. They cursed us to only see the worst in ourselves, blind to the fact the whole time we were hurting ourselves. I used to wonder.
So what do you reckon? Does North Korea blow up the nuclear bomb before or after the weekend?
I reckon it's got a lot to do with whether it's a long weekend or not. And if it's a long, or it's, a Queen's birthday weekend, that would be a present, wouldn't it?
Well, we're talking North Korea. Do they have weekends in North Korea?
They'd be pretty weak if they didn't.
Yeah.
Yeah, so well, they'd have to have, I think they have a weekend all week. Yeah.
And they do a lot of atonement on based on famine.
Yes, well, you'd have to, wouldn't you?
Yeah. Yeah, you've to be strong in a world of non-comprehension towards the great leader.
Yeah, oh, well, of course. So I think that there's quite a possibility that you would mid-weekend. How about okay. that? Mid-weekend?
Yeah, well, let's get together again and study the mushroom cloud when it turns up, and we can eat that mushroom soup then.
Oh, yes. Well, I mean, that sounds pretty appetizing, doesn't
it? If it's
really?
Not radioactive enough, we can chuck a bit of yellow cake into it.
Yellow cake, mushroom soup.
Stir it up a bit, you know.
That'd be the second course now.
And then finally, we'll be able to find weapons of mass deception even in North Korea.
Well, I mean, it wouldn't be hard to find, would it?
No, not at all. Existed all along, long before Iraq.
Long before.
I think we'd eat pretty well.
The military operation in Iraq.
Also, long before Iraq.
Long before the military operation in Iraq.
Pointing the finger at our leader saying, he's got stuck in Iraq, you know, but this was all long before
the military operation in Iraq.
I'm going to lift my beer on this one. Cheers, skull.
Look, that's very satisfying.
North Korea, the Iranians, North Korea, the world, nuclear weapon, the United Nations.
Long before the military operation in Iraq.
Oh, well, this is the postscriptum. By the way, if they did blow up the bomb by now while you hear this program, be assured that I find it exhilarating because it liberates me from having to attend the Iran story or uranium, and God knows other kind of radioactive stories. What do you reckon?
Well, it would divert anybody's attention, wouldn't it, away from... And that would give us a break from Iran. We could concentrate on some more hyperbole to do with Kim Jong-il.
Exactly.
Yes. And so this being a postscript, what are we talking about? After, before or after the event?
Yeah, in case it has happened by the time the listener...
In case it has happened.
Yeah.
Yes, well, okay. And
but it has happened long...
Long before the military operation in Iraq.
Yes, well, I mean, Iraq. What an impossible dream that was, you know.
Well, Kim Jong-il is cool. You can blow it up and it doesn't matter. We can drop the Iran story.
Oh, of course you can drop the Iran story. It'd be wonderful if he actually could prove he had one.
Yeah.
And then everybody would have one.
And
because we know the...
All these people south of the 54th latitude, this... U.S. GIs, their soldiers, they would love it to see a mushroom cloud right next door, hey?
Well, I'm sure they would. They would get quite a thrill out of it. Wouldn't it be thrilling?
They'd get the attention out of it.
Yeah.
Okay, then. See you next week, then.
Well, would that be a magic mushroom, do you think? Or would it be...
You will see the walls sweating blood or something.
Ah,
like
that'd be magic,
Very psychedelic.
Yeah.
Long before the military operation in Iraq.
Thank you for listening to scan.org. There are more programs available at nimbimradiomedia.libsyn.com. Libsyn as in Liberated Syndicate.